away from India this time. He is.
All the way from Leicester.
Oh, all the way from Leicester. Usually India or America, but all the way Leicester. So we're going to hear a few words from Maharaj. And yeah, I'll just pass it straight over to him.
I love the sunshine, but is it blinding? I don't know how to read that. Om Gyana Tilam Tasya Ramjana Shivaya Chakshuritam Jena Tasma Shivaya. Well, I'll give you my vision for Pandava Sena. So you can vote for me next time. It's pretty simple. My vision is this. We have, as you know, in a lot of our centers practically all over the world, we've got this Indian diaspora going on. We've got Indian people all over the world, and a lot of them have become, a small share have become Krishna conscious devotees. And they're very actively and enthusiastically preaching to other Indians. And that's lovely, because that's how we get more and more Indian devotees joining. But my vision is that that's okay, that's stage one. But ultimately what should be happening is that our Indian devotees, like, well, all of our devotees, but especially the Indian devotees, are very qualified. You've got fortunate birth, fortunate cultural background, good samskaras, everything. Pretty good. Not perfect. But, you know, very good, very fortunate. Now that gives you an edge. You can very quickly become Krishna conscious. You can very quickly get the ideas and the practice. The culture is already practically there. You kind of just have to buff it a little bit and clear away some of the rubbish. And Krishna consciousness is there. Where for Westerners, it's more like a demolition job. You have to paint your brick. But now, the next thing is that you guys have to preach to those guys. That's the real thing. That Chaitanya, I see almost a setup, a plan, a pattern here that's like either it was made for us or it's just so good that we should take advantage of it. And that is that you've got all these Indian people, like, seeded practically all over the world. They're in the Gulf, they're in America, they're in Canada, they're in, you know, almost time. When we go to a new place, how did you guys get here? You know, there's Indian people waiting for us. So, the result should be that you should be preaching to people all over the world. Not just to other Indians, although that's, you know, that's wonderful, because then we get more of you guys. But you need to be reaching out to those people. I had a talk about this because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, it's not just my concoction, Paratabhumite Manusha Janma Lojar, Janma Sartak Kori Karaparopata. You've probably heard this like 472,000 times. So that's there. So I had a chat with our New Jersey devotees about this. Our New Jersey, basically Gujarati Sangha, with a few Bengalis and some UPLs and other people. And said, basically, what's stopping you? You know, what would cause you to hesitate to do this? To, you know, go outside the boundaries? First thing is, well, okay, we got these different reasons. First reason is, it's so easy to preach to the Indians. You know, all the cultural symbols are the same, the language is the same, you just say a few things and, you know, pull a little bit and boom, you know, people will come, people will engage, and then you just have to work on and work on and work on. So it's easy. It's like the fruits that are low lying on the tree. You just have to jump a little bit and you got them. So that's the first thing. People are lazy, so they go for the easy ones. Next thing is, there were all these reasons. We don't know if people will understand our language. You know, we speak with these, we're speaking with a funny accent, but we don't know if people will understand our language. Okay, next thing was, what if people commit offenses? You know, that we'll tell them about Krishna, and then they'll say something offensive. And so better that we not say anything. What were some of the other reasons? We don't know what to say. We don't know very much about Krishna consciousness. We're just neophytes, and you know, we don't feel that we are qualified to say anything, so we stay. And what else? We're shy. You know, we don't know. We're reluctant to go out and talk to people. What if people say no? Yeah, what if people don't like it? In other words, basically all the things that any salesman runs into. You know, the same thing that any preacher, any salesman, any political activist, anybody who's trying to push anything runs into. I don't know if I have the strength. What if people say no? What will I tell people? I don't know enough about it. And so on. In other words, none of the reasons really amounted to very much. Now, of course, they're formidable reasons, because these are all the psychological things that we have to overcome. But really, they're in the mind. They're in the mind. Whatever little qualification I have, it's enough. I can go out and do something, and I'll get more qualified by going out and doing it. For all the people who say no, there's one person who says yes. So if 275 people say no and one person says yes, we won. We got one person. If people commit offenses, well, at least you gave them a chance. Right? That's, what do you call it? The cost of doing business. There will always be some, you know, some misses. You don't hit the ball every time. Every now and then someone, you know, winds up in the hospital, whatever it is. So we don't always succeed. But for everyone who commits offenses, there'll be somebody who'll say, no, tell me about it. What's about it? I really don't know anything about it. And so on. All the reasons didn't amount to insurmountable obstacles. They were obstacles, they're things that you have to work on, but they weren't impossible. So we talked about that, and then I went through the other side, that all of the advantages you have for preaching to Western people. They thought, you know, Western people, you know. Number one, you're preaching about Indian culture. Now, who is the authority on Indian culture? Right? If you're Indian, everybody expects that you know something about it. You may be the first-class idiot, you may be totally uninformed or misinformed. Utterly confused. But they'll look at first person they'll turn to, they'll say, well, what about Ravi? He must know something about this. They just assume that you know. And of course, most don't know. You ask any Indian, you know, I'm confused. I read something in Bhagavad Gita, and, you know, Bhagavad Gita, I don't know. You know, my grandmother used to read it. Even they asked the Prime Minister, Jawaharlal Nehru, he came to America, Prabhupada cited this, they asked him something about Bhagavad Gita, and he says, "What? You know, I'm a politician, what can I say about Bhagavad Gita?" You know, and he's pundit, Nehru. So, fact is that most people don't know, but they think that they will know. Second thing is, imagine if you actually know. You know, they'll take you as an authority just because, you know, your name and your accent and your skin color. But if you actually know, it's super impressive. We have all this facility in ISKCON. We have Bhagavad Gita. We have Srimad Bhagavatam. We have the what it takes to make sense out of all this stuff. You know, what are all these gods and what are all these statues and why this and what is that? We actually have a consistent line of understanding. Like I was talking to one person. Islam has one advantage. You can. It's got a message. You know, it's got a banner. What's this? What's Islam? There's one God. Allah's. What is that? There's no God but Allah, and Muhammad is his prophet. Boom. Everybody can understand it. And what's the message of Hinduism? Oh, there's so many gods, and there's so many others, and you're also a god, and you know, nobody can figure out, you know, where the head is and where the tail is. But if someone's actually trained in the parampara system, in fact, someone's actually trained by devotees of Krishna, they can give a consistent message. Yeah, you know, all those so many gods, why are they doing that? The real thing is that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Life is meant for devotional service. And first people say, oh. It's not that hard to understand. You can make sense out of it. Next thing is that you're all materially qualified. Now, I was speaking to our audience in New Jersey who are mostly professional people. You know, so they're like, you know, well-placed in material. So you're not yet, you know, you haven't earned your first million yet. You're not working for big multinational corporations. You're still working on it, but you're very qualified people. That's my experience. Generally, the Indian boys and girls pretty much wipe up the floor with the Westerners because the Westerners are all lazy. And Indian boys and girls, just by, you know, culturally, by cultural background, you study, you work, you're focused, you have discipline. And, you know, they're, oh, God help them, they're a kind of a spoiled generation. You know, their forefathers worked hard, and now these guys are coasting. So as soon as there's a class and there's a few Indian students in it, next thing you know, they're at the head of the class. It just works that way. So you're materially qualified, and you'll graduate, and then you'll make your millions, and you know, become CEOs and all that kind of stuff. But in the meantime, you're students. But you're bright. You accomplish things. You've got it together. So from that point of view, also, you know, people, you know, you're not just like a, I don't know what's happening. I'm just spacing out. No, you're together people. You're together people. You're Indian, so you know about the subject matter. And you're trained. And you're following some principles for spiritual advancement that gives you power. Austerity means you get power. That's a fact. People who are indulging their senses are losing their power. And people who are controlling their senses, that sense control gives you personal power. Spiritual power, or, you know, power of character. You know, people will say, get character. That's power. So you're powerful, educated, you come from the right background, you've got the samskaras, you've got all of these things. And if you just take this and energize, you know, use this energy and then, you know, whatever you want to say, pull the trigger or light the fuse or whatever it is, you'll have impact beyond your expectations. Even the people Prabhupada picked up, you know, who are frankly, you know, kind of motley batch of dropouts and countercultural, colorful figures. You know, we managed to do something. Just because we were enthusiastic and we were, maybe got some blessings from Prabhupada and we thought, okay, let us try to do it. We managed to accomplish a few things. So you're more qualified than we were by far. So if you pick this up very seriously, no, not if, that's bad. As you pick this up very seriously, and go beyond boundaries. You preach to the the Indians, and you preach to the Westerners also. And not just Westerners, doesn't mean within Great Britain. It means all over the world. There's so many countries that are, you know, virgin. There's nobody there, no preachers yet, no Krishna consciousness movement yet. Still open territory, frontier. You can go any place in the world, and some of you just automatically will. You know, you get a job, you go someplace, and now you're the Krishna consciousness movement in that country. And it's by being prepared, by being strong, by being enlightened, by knowing the philosophy, by knowing how to do the different things for spreading Krishna consciousness, you'll be able to do it. You'll go to a country, either because you want to preach there, or because your job took you there, or because your in-laws live there, or whatever reason it is. and you'll do it, and Krishna consciousness will grow. That's my vision. That, you know, the rest of us will do something also. You know, a few white guys will distribute a few books, start a few temples. Maybe they'll do wonderful things. The Americans, the Russians, you know, it's not clothes that only... But you have a unique set of qualifications. Just use them. And I think it's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's plan, Krishna's plan, that it will have impact. And lots of it. But it needs your seriousness, your commitment, your enthusiasm, your capitalizing on your qualifications. Because it's great to be the son of a high court judge, but that doesn't make you my lord. You take what you've got and you capitalize on it, and then next thing, you're a high court judge. So, that enough? Am I repeating myself enough now? That's it. Girls too. Prabhupada said one time, I think it's on this recently released video series that Yoda Prabhupada was doing, that Rukmini Dasi, my god sister, was saying that Prabhupada was giving a lecture in New York and saying that I want every one of my disciples to start a temple. And he said, even the girls? Prabhupada said, why not? So everyone, take it, develop it, spread it, you'll have wonderful impact. Especially you're also advantageously placed, as our older devotees are advantageously placed in business, and they've got, you know, and they're associating with big people, they have access to, you know, well-established people in the material world. So you don't have that, but you've got access to the students. So you're well placed to do all sorts of subversive activities. Prahlada Maharaj was preaching in the school, and he began preaching to the sons of the demons who were all being trained in materialistic life, and got them chanting Hare Krishna, and Prabhupada said, and ruined the whole school. So you may not exactly bring down Cambridge and so on, but you're very well positioned to have access to these students, to inject Krishna consciousness into their minds and into their life. I've seen it in different universities that I've been speaking at here and also in America. Just very, very well placed to just take it and boom. Just a little more energy, wonderful things will happen. And then those people will grow up, and then they'll be, you know, big men, and they'll be your friends, and they'll be Krishna conscious, and you can do things. And any questions? No?
When you're trying to preach to a certain class of people, when you're speaking about what obstacles our mind comes up with, sometimes we just don't know which angle to approach people at. Like, we're so convinced that this person can never take to it, like, their background is so completely inconducive.
Don't believe it. Tell your mind to get lost. You deal with that by doing it. Because by doing it, you find out that you're wrong. You know, rather that your mind is wrong, that it's lying to you. That it's not that only... We used to think that only the hippies could become Krishna conscious. You know, they were uniquely qualified by virtue of their deep mystical experiences. You know, these were the only people who would actually be able to understand this. And the rest of the world just wouldn't be able to get it. Totally wild idea that that's you were thinking like that. That only, you know, the same class of people, basically, people who are like us will be able to understand it. Not true. All these very straight people joined, and people from, you know, clean cut kids and stuff. People who distribute books learn that sometimes, you know, the person who looks least likely to take a book, right? You have that experience? Person who will never take a book, and, you know, like, you hardly think you'd just be wasting your time on it. And he takes a book. And maybe he's like, yeah, I was looking for you people, or, you know, I'm interested, or, you know, my sister has one, or something. The person you never thought of approaching. So it's like that. It's, you know, there's some indications. You think this person would be likely, that person would be likely. You try it. But then also the people who are the, you know, most odd, weird, definitely not kind of people. Why are you taking it to them?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for your words. According to Prabhupada's, the way he brought you lot up, how best for us to maintain someone once we've attracted them to an initial one or two programs in the society? How to maintain it?
Oh, I want to add something on what you said, though. You know, what's the best angle? You find out they're doing it. You know, try A, try B, try C. And you'll find out in your experience, first of all, what seems to work, and second of all, what seems to work for you. Because my angle might work for me, and when you try it, it clunks for you. But you may have some other angle which for you works very well. So the main thing is doing it. You'll have some successes, you'll have some failures. You capitalize on your successes and don't worry about the failures. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it gets better and better. Yes. How is Prabhupada's program for, like, once you've got the bhakti and how do you reel them in? By developing relationships. Now, Prabhupada did that very simply. People would come, he would meet them, he would talk with them, he would give them prasadam. It's explained, it's there in Nectar of Instruction, Dati, Pratigranati, I give you something, I accept something from you, I reveal my thoughts to you, I hear from you about your thoughts. I give you something to eat, I accept something to eat from you. These loving dealings create relationships. But Prabhupada did that in the early days, personally. He would cultivate the people who would come, whether they were hippies or lawyers or whoever. And he went on doing that. He would meet with them and so on. That's like basic. Now beyond that, you can think of all kinds of plans and schemes, how to cultivate people. The main thing is having an ongoing relationship, because you can't cultivate a person that you only meet once and then don't know how to get back in touch with. So how do you have repeated access to these people? It may be that you go on doing a program in the same place, the same place, the same place, and they, you know, have the opportunity to keep coming, keep coming, keep coming. It may be that you have them on email and you keep sending them reminders, 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 reminders. And people don't usually respond, by the way, to the first reminder, but after the seventh or something like that, I think, you know, maybe I should go to this thing. It works like that. You know, so you have someone's email is great because it doesn't cost anything. In fact, you know, we didn't have that. You've got email free. Great. Email, groups, you know, internet groups. Free again. You know, join, and it can be on A or B or C, anything that touches on Krishna consciousness or focuses on Krishna consciousness. Invite people into your group. Friend networks, either personal, face-to-face, physical friend networks or virtual internet friend networks, and be putting out Krishna consciousness. Literature. Small dose literature. And we have books. Books are solid, but books don't change. Books don't adapt. When you've got, you know, your newsletters and your whatever it is that you're putting out, and it's going to people and telling them about the new development, the next thing on the horizon, the thing that just happened, the plans that we're making, the help that we need, the you know, whatever it is, how they can get involved. How they can get involved, or how they can find out something, how they can get something they want, or how they can contribute something that others want. Keeping that contact and cultivating it. Having programs that you invite people to, you know, having, maybe you have lists of people and you, one way or another way, phone, telephone. So many people came to Krishna consciousness on the simple thing that somebody would have a list and call all the people on the list. Please come to the Sunday feast. Please come to the Sunday feast. We've made dozens and hundreds of devotees just on that. That somebody personally called them up and say, are you coming to the feast? Because the answer was no until you called them. And they needed that much only, just somebody to say, Are you coming? They say, well, why don't you come? Well, what else are you doing? Well, right? So it's that repeated contact. Prabhupada said, little drops of water wear away stone. Most people don't, you know, learn about Krishna on Tuesday and join the temple on Thursday. It's repeated contact, repeated influence, or a change in their life. You know, they weren't giving it much attention, and then all of a sudden, you know, their kid brother died. And suddenly the world doesn't make sense anymore. And then they remember you. And the whole world changes. You didn't do anything. You were just going on with your business, but their world changed. So, and because you were regularly, you know, keeping some sort of connection, now that connection now means something to them, when before they took it for granted. So, in that way, cultivating. And, you know, I've given a few ideas. These are like from an old apostle. You're young guys. What are your ideas? And these are just things that I know about. I don't know all the ideas in the universe. I'm jamming. You know, I've been thought of jamming.
One of my friends I feel has probably got the right type of mindset. He's from we were friends outside of a devotional sort of circumstance. I think he would really take it quite well. However, he still interacts with me in a certain way, which probably isn't very conducive for my Krishna consciousness or for developing it. And so I talked to another senior devotee within Pandava Center, and he said, we'll try and put him in a devotional atmosphere, and therefore you can integrate with him somewhere, and then other people can preach to him. However, when I tried to invite him actually to the boys' program, and he said, it's not a Krishna thing, is it? So already he's got kind of like a wariness and a stigma. So how should I approach him? Should I just carry on trying to cultivate him at the risk of...
it's a Shiva thing. It's a Shiva thing, don't worry.
But so I don't know in what way should I, what should I do? What's the sort of
There's no formula, you know. It's okay. When you find A, here's what you do, you know, like a medical prescription. The thing to do is what works, but we don't know what that is. And maybe it's nothing. The first thing is to be detached, because he's your friend, and you know, maybe he was your close friend and everything, and maybe nothing that you do is going to work. And that's the first thing. We try, and maybe he really turns over. You try, and maybe nothing happens at all. And we go on to the next one. But if there's some prospect, there's some chance. Maybe front on. It's a Krishna thing. Yeah, it's a Krishna thing. And why, you know, what's the problem? Yeah? Confrontation. Maybe. Yeah, it's a Krishna thing. What's the problem? You know, what's with you? Maybe that doesn't work.
He's so-called Buddhist. Like, he's done
it. He's a Buddhist.
Nominal,
not, of course, nominal Buddhist. There are no real Buddhists. All real Buddhists emerged a long time ago. Interesting. What do you do? You get a person who thinks he's a Buddhist. You just have to work at it. Too easy to hear the sound of two hands clapping. Buddhists want to hear the sound of one hand clapping. Silly, huh? I don't have a Buddhist form in the right. Somebody has to write a Buddhist book. You know, a Krishna conscious perspective on Buddhism. I see there's a lot of things still to be done. Here we have books about other things. We haven't written a book yet, just for the Buddhists. You know, people who think they're Buddhists. And maybe that's your book.
Yeah,
or before we work on the book, maybe, you know, pamphlets. There's an outfit in America, they're based in America, called InterVarsity Press. They started out, or they first came to my attention as being a student ministry. And they're Christians, of course. And their publications were these little, you know, A4s, or in America, 9.5 by 11s, folded up into three, with little raps about different things. They had a rap about Krishna consciousness, they had a rap about something else and something else. You know, they had like 25 different pamphlets or more. And they organized so that they had branches and universities all over the country. They came up with these pamphlets one after another. They would pass out their pamphlets to interested people and come up with new ones on topics that matter, you know, because they were in touch. They were on the campus. It wasn't a batch of people in BBT office in Sweden figuring out what might possibly interest students. You know, it was written by people who were on the scene talking to students, knew what the issues were, knew what answers worked, what answers fell flat. And they'd come up with these things, cheap and dirty, really. They weren't like super glossy, super anything. They were just, you know, here's our message kind of stuff. And that had a lot of impact. They went on and became bigger, and now they're a big press. I don't know if they've started out. I don't think they started out being a big outfit, but now they're like a very big publisher, published lots of books and other things, all about their, you know, their faith outlook. So you can do that. You know, if you're not ready for the book yet, write a pamphlet. You know, have a chat with your Buddhist friend and, you know, explore the arguments with him, see what he's talking about, find the holes in it.
His Holiness Jai Dvait Swami Ki
Jai
Shri Prabhupada Ki
Jai
Andrew Sain Ki
Jai
Gaur Premanande
Jai.